is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into Lineup Logic, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel and DraftKings. Josh Fern talking DraftKings these days. Yeah, we're moving over. We're moving over to football. We're now moving to FanDuel and DK. Good reasons for all of it, of course. Listen, we got 15 games, or excuse me, a full, not a 15, I believe it's 13-game Friday night MLB slate. And Josh and I decided, you know what, we got one more in us before we got to buckle down to our NFL research. Let's take a look at it. It's a great slate, so it's going to be a great player breakdown. We just finished recording it. Before we get to, you know, what Vegas has to say about the slate and all that good stuff, I just wanted to remind you guys, hey, listen, if you didn't see the video, if you didn't listen to the show today about the NFL, you know, content that's upcoming, I want to emphasize the most important point. 100% of subscription fees for Lineup Logic cheat sheets are going to be donated in relief of Hurricane Harvey. 100%. So every single dollar that we make via Patreon in September is going to be donated at the start of NFL season. So you guys are going to see your $10 basically go straight to charity. None of that's coming to me. It's all going to Greater Houston Area Food Bank. We're going to donate all that money there, local space that's going to need the support and need to be helping people on the ground in Houston as they are a long, long road ahead of them to recovery and still dealing with weather down there, which is just unfathomable that they're dealing with that. So if you're not subscribed, if you're thinking about subscribing, you're thinking about donating or whatever the case may be, listen, it's a win-win. $10 donation to the cheat sheet. You use the cheat sheet. Don't use the cheat sheet. Use the Slack chat. Don't use the Slack chat. Either way, you made a $10 donation to a Houston area food bank. That's, you know, that money goes straight there. I'm not keeping any of it. So it's a good cause. Get in there, patreon.com/lineuplogic if you are interested. That said, like I mentioned, we got some baseball to talk about. So let's go ahead and take a look at the 15 games that we have upcoming tonight. All right, first of these is Boston, New York. We have, you know, another episode of this interdivisional stuff in the AL East. It's coming on strong right now. Yankees are at home here, favored. Sonny Gray on the mound, 5 runs for Sonny Gray to 3.9 for the Red Sox. Doug Fister will be pitching for the Red Sox, which is why the Yankees are getting above 5 runs. That said, you know, Doug Fister hasn't been like the gas can that we would expect him to be in this situation. Sonny Gray, good, not necessarily spectacular, and against a low strikeout pesky team in a hitter's park like this. You know, his last start against Seattle was phenomenal, but his start before that was against Boston, and he only made it through 5 innings and got knocked around a little bit. So I'm not in love with Sonny Gray in this slate, but I could see how people would end up there. Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, 8 runs projected in PNC. Gerrit Cole is favored. He's getting a -129 favorite here. 4.2 implied for the Pirates, 3.7 for the Reds, who they're pitching Luis Castillo. This actually is pretty two good pitchers here that should be in a good spot. Gerrit Cole dominated the Reds in his last outing. He's a good investment, a good price there on FanDuel in the 9K range sitting alone. Toronto, Baltimore, this game, I mean, God, if it produces the same offense it did tonight, this is a slate winner, so go and get it. 10 runs projected here in Camden, Joseph Biagini versus Kevin Gausman. You gotta, you got to like Baltimore again. Biagini allowing a lot of contact, 5.6 runs projected there for the home team. Gausman pitching well, and he's the favorite here against the Jays. Phillies, Marlins, 9.5 runs projected here. Can I interest you in more Giancarlo Stanton? He's got Nick Pivetta coming to town, and Nick Pivetta is a bit of a gas can, my friend, a bit of a gas can. Dylan Peters on the opposite side. He's favored here. The kid coming up from AAA, making his first start. Metrics look good from AAA. They look pretty solid. He should be a solid piece for the Marlins. Obviously, you know, rookie pitcher, you got to be a little bit careful there. So we'll tread lightly here. And if anything, it's the power hitters in Miami that I'm interested in. Angels Rangers, 10.5 runs projected in Arlington. Tyler Skaggs versus Cole Hamels. Cole Hamels has not been great lately, but the Angels can't seem to hit lefties. And if you really, I mean, that's the annoying part. Although I will say, with the addition of Justin Upton, you kind of like this spot for Justin Upton. He can hit lefties. So maybe it's you go right to the new guy in town, Justin Upton here in this spot against Hamels. Tampa Bay versus Chicago, 9.5 runs projected in guaranteed rate. Blake Snell versus Reynaldo Lopez. The Rays are favored here. Lopez just giving up way too many fly balls. Young guy throws the ball hard, giving up way too many fly balls. So the Rays are getting it together. They're expecting the Rays to send a couple of these balls out of guaranteed rate tomorrow night. Royals Twins, 9.5 runs projected in Minnesota. Jason Hamill versus Dylan G. Dylan G is favored here behind what is the hottest offense in baseball. This, I got to think that Dylan G probably wouldn't be favored against Jason Hamill in certain situations, but Jason Hamill has been rough of late, getting knocked around quite a bit, no doubt about it. And, you know, this is a situation where you like both sides. Neither of these pitchers are very reliable, and I think this game has definitely the ability to hit the over. No doubt about it. 9.5 runs feels a little bit short to me. I could see 10 runs easily from this team in this ballpark, these teams in this ballpark. Nats, Brewers, 9 runs projected in Milwaukee. Tanner Roark versus Jimmy Nelson. You know, it'd be nice to say that Jimmy Nelson is in a good spot here. He's been giving up runs. He's been doing the Jeff Samardzija kind of thing where he's been elite with the strikeouts and then giving up runs. You know, so the Nationals in this spot with Trey Turner back in the lineup, Jason Worth back in the lineup, they're showing a little bit more discipline. I don't know that I want to go to Jimmy Nelson here in this spot and just kind of tilt. I don't know if I want to do that to myself. Tanner Roark has been very good in the second half, but the Brewers even got to Gio tonight. I think that the Brewers, they're going to do enough to make me not want Tanner Roark in my lineup, but not enough that I want to necessarily roster all of them. Diamondbacks, Rockies, 12 runs projected in Coors. Taijuan Walker versus Kyle Freeland. This is about a pick 'em. 6 runs projected for each. And the pricing here is just insane. I can't necessarily decide how much I want this. You know, this is a great possible game stack, but I think that if I'm gonna do this game, I'm doing it as a game stack. I don't necessarily want all of these pieces individually. You know, that it's not a bad situation, but they're so damn expensive that you have no access to viable pitching, and you have to make sure that these bats go off. Dodgers Padres, 7 runs and projected here, and here's where we get our pitching. The myth, the man, the legend returns, Clayton Kershaw versus the Padres. You mean to tell me you'd rather have Coors over Clayton Kershaw versus the Padres? I don't know, man. There's certain things, deaths, taxes, Clayton Kershaw versus the Padres. These are all things that, you know, I'm into, I'm interested in. I think that that's where you want to be with your pitching. And it's not even close. My dog's over here bugging me, asking me to go out. Athletics Mariners, 9.5 runs projected in Safeco. Mike Leake will get the ball for the Mariners. He just got traded over there versus Shamania. Mariners favored in this one. They've not been particularly good against lefties, but I'll be interested to see what this lineup looks like. Manaea has not been good at all recently. So Mariners are pretty cheap at home. There's a lot to like here in this game. I think you could definitely go to the home favorites here. St. Louis, San Francisco, Jack Flaherty pitching for the Cards. Apparently, this is the guy they made space for. This Jack Flaherty character. This is the guy that they made space for in order to get to get rid of Leak. So. Flaherty's pitching for the Cardinals in this one versus the Giants. 8.5 runs projected in San Francisco. Johnny Cueto returning from the DL, so I'd be interested to see what Cueto offers in this situation. Who knows? You know, to be completely honest, who knows what he's going to be capable of here? You know, kind of hard to tell. Really, kind of hard to tell. So we will we'll keep an eye out on Cueto. And see which direction he's trending coming off the DL. You know, if he's back to kind of what he was doing, then it's certainly viable to go after him. He's just not really doing it. All right, so that's it, guys. Player breakdown on the way. 13 games for you. Josh Fern, my man, here by my side one last time for the Major League Baseball breakdown before we hit this NFL season hard. So let's go ahead and jump in and figure out who we love.
Who do you love?
All right. One more Major League Baseball podcast. One last rodeo, Josh. One final hurrah. How are we doing, my friend?
One more time. Gonna celebrate. Yeah, yeah.
I'm good. I'm good. Sean, I'm good. I'm drinking a 21st Amendment Brewery Brew Free or Die IPA.
Oh yeah, yeah, 21st Amendment.
Winning some moolah on DK preseason NFL. And feeling pretty good right now with a couple of the MLB lineups looking somewhat promising. We'll see how Michael Wacha does this evening. But other than that, I'm good. I'm good, man. And yeah, it's the last MLB podcast for the season. And it's unbelievable, man. This season has flown by.
It has. It truly has. And, you know, I mean, it feels like I've been, you know, I can't even the blur of breaking down all of these slates, but you know, we're coming on football strong. It's going to be around here, you know, sooner than we know. And the you know, the preseason week four, it's over with as far as I'm concerned. It's already started, so it's already over with. You know, there is, unless there's any major injuries to be worried about, it feels like we are ready to go. College football this weekend, NFL next. So, you know, baseball was an amazing, amazing thing. It was fun. But we're moving on. Football time. And why not? Because the fall is for football.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, for you, I mean, all the listeners out there, you know, who are loyal Lineup Logic listeners and hear you every day, I mean, they know you do this damn thing every day. You know, but from my vantage point, you know, just spending time talking to you offline and doing the cheat sheets together and collaborating on stuff, like, I know you bust your ass on this. So, you know, I just got to give you props. Got to give you some corn pops. Got to give you some props, Sean.
We're getting pretty old, Fern, when we're giving each other pops instead of
I'm going to crack open a pop for you and pass you a cold one. No, I got to give you some props, man, for just being so committed to this every day. I mean, seriously, like, listeners, this guy, two kids, wife, you know, he's got a household to take care of, bills to pay, and, you know, you kick ass, Sean. You do this every day. You're the fucking man.
Well, you know, it's fun. And it's, you know, I'd go crazy if I didn't have something to do. That's how my brain works. So I exhaust it with understanding random things about baseball that other people simply don't know.
Yeah. Well, let's do it one more fucking time. Let's do it
one more time.
Yeah. And then we're going to move into some NFL foosball. And that's going to be so fun. I'm so excited for it. We've been we've been talking about, and we'll get to the slate in just a second. But you know, Sean and I, we've been talking about some ideas for how we're going to do this football thing, and
it's
exciting. I'm really pumped for it.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be great. The football show should be really fun. And you know, we have a lot to learn there. But hey, listen, we got 15 games, and what better way to for us to go out, but to usher back in Mr. Clayton Kershaw. It feels like we haven't had a decent, high quality pitcher in a while. I guess it's the last couple slates. We really haven't had thank God, I don't have to worry about my pitching. I just have to roster. Although the Chris Sale was the other night. So Chris Sale was, that's fine. But we get Kershaw back from the DL, and he's got the Padres for 13-5. But what do you think of this matchup? I mean, it's almost perfect, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a good point. It is kind of fun to have Kershaw on our last 2017 MLB show. And yeah, 13-5 on DK. I haven't looked at Fan. Oh, for those of you that aren't aware, we're kind of, I guess I'm going to say we're splitting it up now because this is the last show. But going forward, I'm more of a, I think I'm going to be leaning more on DraftKings. I'm just liking DraftKings a little bit more these days. And I could go on and on about that. I'll save you guys the explanation. But, so when I refer to pricing, I'm referring to DraftKings pricing. But yeah, 13-5 on DK, and what a soft landing for him against the Padres. The opening line is 2.8 runs implied for San Diego, and Kershaw and the Dodgers are -235, heavily favored by the opening lines for Vegas. The Dodgers, they're getting their ace back, and they really need him. They really need him back. You know, obviously Rich Hill and Maeda, you know, they've done really good work, but there's a difference there in Kershaw. I mean, he's just that presence that nobody can replicate, you know, and he's been out for more than a month with back issues, but really no concerns. You know, he just struck out 8 in 5 innings in his most recent rehab start in AAA Oklahoma City. So he should, you know, come right back and, you know, have no issues with any sharpness or readjustment periods. No worries about rostering him with full confidence against San Diego. As you guys all know, the big league numbers, you know, unbelievable, pristine. 63 xFIP minus, which is just outstanding. 31.1 K rate, 14% swinging strike rate, 28.2% hard contact, 24.4 soft contact. I mean, we can go on and on and on. All of those are absolutely outstanding. Bottom line is he's going to continue his dominant form. And like I said, you know, he couldn't ask for a softer landing spot than drawing the Padres. This is a team with a 65 WRC plus over the past 2 weeks. Second lowest in MLB. So, you know, if I'm on FanDuel, you know, he's got to be a lock, as good of a lock as anyone for cash. And on DraftKings, you know, I don't see any way you don't use him, especially with the handful of decent, really low-priced pitching options for you to offset that large cost. So, lock in Kershaw. He's going to be outstanding. He's going to be heavily owned for sure, but for good reason.
Yeah, 12.1K on FanDuel, which is, you know, very reasonable given the fact that, you know, it's funny. He pitched the opening game of the season, his opening game of the season against the Padres, and he did exactly what Kershaw does. 7 clean innings, 8 Ks, you know, quality start, win. It just, that's what he does. It's so... He manages everything. He manages the contact. He manages the, you know, the swinging strikes. And I think the thing that I like the most is we know how careful the Dodgers are. You know, he's not even. You know, he must feel fine and perfectly healthy if the Dodgers are willing to throw him out there. And in my mind, that's the biggest vote of confidence. They will handle this thing with what's the phrase? Handle this thing with gloves.
Kid gloves.
Kid gloves. Thank you. I was going to be like, they will handle this with soft gloves. What? Sean, what? But yeah, no, they don't mess around with pitcher injuries, so this is a good spot for them. But you dive off of a cliff, Fern. The pricing is insane. It's literally like a $3,000 gap down to the next guy who is on FD. The next guy is Garrett Cole, who, I mean, has been great and just dusted Cincinnati in his most recent outing, and I like him, and Sonny Gray is fine, but I think I'm a little bit more interested in this mid-8K range, and one guy that I'm paying attention to is Kevin Gausman of Baltimore. You know, Sonny Gray with a matchup. I think Garrett Cole, let me be very clear. Garrett Cole is in a great spot. Vegas likes him. His numbers recently have been excellent. He just saw Cincinnati. Part of me makes me a little bit anxious. You know, a 5-day turnaround on the Cincinnati starting lineup kind of makes me a little bit nervous, but he is at home and I think he's in a good spot. But I think I gotta like Kevin Gausman. You know, Toronto tonight is blowing up, which is, you know, that's great for fantasy purposes. But Kevin Gausman is not Jeremy Hellickson. You know, he does not have the fly ball problem. And Gausman continues this second half surge, 25% K rate, XFIP below 4. You know, he's allowing hard contact. That's always been a thing for him, 34% hard contact. But, you know, his ability to limit base runners, get a few extra strikeouts here, and he lowered his walk rate by 1%. I don't know if that's necessarily great. But that maintains – that still is the issue that I have. The biggest thing in my mind that I worry about is the walks. If he starts to get out of control, Toronto – I feel like Toronto knows how to squeeze pitchers. They know how to sit on pitches with guys with control issues, make the umpire make decisions, and make things go their way in the batter's box. And that's kind of how they've been able to nudge themselves up in the standings recently, I think, just by being more patient and inducing more walks. There was a time, like last week, when their walk rate was up over 10%. It's not quite there anymore. It's flirting with 9% now. Strikeout rate at 21%, WRC plus at 89 in the last month or so. So they're not anything to be scared of. I just get so annoyed with them. I think the thing that I'm worried about is the walks and whether or not they sit on and reduce his strikeout upside. So, I mean, Fern, you've been watching Gausman. Do you feel like he's got it right now, or is he kind of, was it a flash in the pan in July and August?
No, I think that he's, I mean, let's put it this way. Early in the season when we were picking on him, you know, like pretty much every start, you know, he came out, I mean, that was not who he is. And when he was just on fire, you know, in recent months, I mean, that's definitely, you know, a performance that has to regress a little bit. But he's right. Kind of settling back into that, I guess, that best fit line, if you will. You know, the path where he should be. You know, he is, at this point in his career, like a slightly above average starting pitcher. You know, he's got the stuff to be an ace. But everything that I've read and seen about him is the mental side of things needs a lot of work. But, I mean, he's got, you know, top 15, top 10 stuff as far as starting pitchers go. He's got that mid to high 90s fastball that, you know, you can blow that by anybody, you know, and you just start with that and forget about it. I mean, Gausman is a beast. And Toronto is the kind of team that, you know, pitchers like him can pick on, you know, overpowering pitchers. So I think that he is who he is right now, you know, slightly above average, definitely startable without a doubt against a team like Toronto. So I don't have any reservations about that.
Okay, good. That's what I wanted to hear, because I like him in this spot. And I think, you know, a little bit of the, like, the effect of people, you know, seeing what Toronto is capable of doing tonight, you know, might lower his ownership. And he is a guy who can get you 8Ks.
Yeah. You know? I mean, the thing with him is, you know, he's that, like, he's a fastball slider kind of pitcher. And, I mean, guys like him, I mean, if they can't get the fastball, if they can't get teams to respect the fastball, then the slider is worthless because he needs to induce, you know, whiffs, you know, on strike two, you know, and outside of the zone. And, you know, teams weren't offering at that pitch. They were taking it because, you know, he's not locating it, you know, low and away, you know, on the corners, like he hopefully will be in the next year or two as he continues to develop. But, you know, he's locating the fastball. He's throwing more strikes early in the count. And, you know, that makes that slider just far more effective because it keeps, you know, keeps batters on their toes. And like I said, I mean, we're talking about the Blue Jays here. Like, they have their moments, you know, individually. But as a team, very rarely do they, you know, produce an onslaught of runs. So, no worries.
Like tonight, for example?
Yeah, exactly. So, Kendrys Morales, GOAT.
Kendrys Morales, he was terrible for like 60 days, and he decided that he'd come back to life tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I initially wrote this guy up because I actually think, for as much as I like Gausman, Mike Clevinger actually might be in a better spot. So I will probably hem and haw over this, but if push comes to shove, I might go Clevinger. I really like this matchup here.
Yeah. Oh man, Clevinger has been awesome. I mean, he's been awesome this whole season, but he's really come on strong as the seasons wore on. I think it's just, you know, the sample, in small sample sizes, Clevinger can leave a little bit to be desired because he lacks the command that we would like to see from a pitcher with his skill set. I mean, he has elite strikeout stuff, but he's still learning to hone in his command and, you know, locate his pitches and cut down on the walks and, you know, the high pitch count early in the game, you know, fourth or fifth inning. Commonly he'll find himself at 80, 90 pitches in the fifth inning, and that's not doing anyone any good if you're rostering him, hoping he'll get deep into the game. But he's really come into form over the past month, you know, up there with the top 10 to 15 starting pitchers in baseball and, you know, different measurements like xFIP minus and K rate. I mean, so he's, you know, striking batters out, you know, 30%+ K rate, you know, really good xFIP minus in the 60s, which is absolutely elite. And at a 9K price on DK, coupled with the fact that the line opened at 3.5 runs for the Tigers, he's at Detroit. -260, Cleveland is just extremely heavily favored. And it's not a surprise because Clevinger's on the mound, but also because Buck Farmer's opposing him. And we'll get to Buck Farmer later.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, you'll talk more about that. But, I mean, he's similar to Gausman. You know, he needs guys to chase the breaking ball if he's going to continue to strike batters out at this clip. And Detroit, you know, we all know Detroit, even without – JD Martinez, you know, they are not a terrible offense. I mean, they got rid of Alex Avila. Almost said Mike Avilas. Wow. even without Alex Avila, JD, you know, I mean, the fact that they're what, like 20 games under 500, so mentally some of their studs might be out of it. I mean, they're not a terrible offense. You know, they're like middle of the pack.
Upton, dude.
Yeah, Upton. But Upton, I know, of course, yeah.
He's out.
Yeah, but they strike out. They strike out so much.
But here, well, Jay up to L.A. You saw that today, right?
What?
You were in parent teacher. What were you at open house? School open house.
Did it happen today?
Yes, he fucking got traded to the Angels.
Holy balls!
Oh man,
Angels land Upton and swap with Tigers. Holy shit, dude.
Yeah, I know. The Angels kind of just got aggressive there.
Live, Fern misses the news.
Fern missed the news. School has started for Fern, what the guys. Fuck? Give him a little.
They
bit
traded. He's been working. Grayson Long, and a player.
Yeah. So, but that, I mean, there's your most dangerously consistent power hitter on that team.
Damn, dude. I know. So this changes. This changes. I mean, yeah. So fuck it, dude. I mean, Mike Clevenger, lock him in.
I know, right? Mike Clevenger in all formats. Although, I mean, he is the perfect SP2, right? I mean, in this situation, you can get a pretty solid. I mean, if as long as he doesn't get any walks, you know, on DK, he is a solid SP2. He's got the K upside. He's probably got the quality start and the win behind him because of Buck Farmer on the opposite side. You know,
and for those of you that aren't familiar with DK scoring, you get penalized for base runners. So on FanDuel, you know, I mean, a pitcher could give up 10 hits and like five walks and somehow escape with like two earned runs and have a bunch of strikeouts. And for all you know, he gave up two hits and no walks. But on DK, the whip, right? The whip matters. Like, how many base runners does a pitcher give up?
Right.
And, it, you know, that makes choosing a pitcher more difficult. So, shit, man, that changes everything. I mean, because just moving Jay up from that lineup, I mean, it just changes the nature of the Tigers lineup.
Yeah, it's no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So changes everything.
Holy Tigers, shit, dude.
Including, yeah, I mean, you really got to like Clevenger here. But hey, listen. You talked about a guy who the fastball – you were talking about the fastball slider thing, okay, with Bundy. Or not Bundy, with – what's his name? Gausman, okay, with Gausman. Blake Snell has had the same problem. You know, he's got a fastball and a slider, and he just can't quite locate them. But I just read an article that went through his last two starts, specifically his Seattle start, and talked about how he has been able to use two pitches that he can locate at a higher rate, the changeup and the curve. So he's popped in his last two starts because he's able to locate the changeup and the curve while the fastball and the slider have been kind of secondary pitches for him. You know, obviously, well, excuse me. Any MLB pitcher with any velocity like Snell uses their fastball pretty consistently. The problem was he was immediately going to his slider to try and get guys to bite. And the slider, because the fastball wasn't locating, the slider just wasn't interesting to people because then it even looked worse. You know, if it had any sort of spin on it, they were like, wait a second, that ball's way outside. And you could see exactly how this is happening. Now, what he's doing is he's coming inside with the curveball and the changeup, and the changeup has been able to get him, you know, a higher amount of groundouts and stuff like that. But the curveball has some just absolutely filthy 12-6 snap on it. There's a gif of him on FanGraphs getting Nelson Cruz of all people to just whiff hard, like full knee bending. Swing as hard as he can, Nelson Cruz.
One of the best hitters against lefties in the league.
Yeah, if not the best in the last 10 years. I mean, he's Nelson fucking Cruz. Anyway, and Nelson Cruz is bending at the knees going, fucking curveball. I knew it was a curveball. So, you know, listen, he's done two straight seven-inning starts with 15 Ks total, and he's only allowed one run. Limited base runners to under six in both situations. You know, he had a couple walks, but he only had a couple hits. No homers. Now, he was pitching in Tampa Bay, so, you know, massive park upgrade this time of year. But he's getting the White Sox tomorrow night, and he is favored in this spot. The White Sox, you know, we know they can hit the ball, right? They've been hitting lefties on and off this year, kind of randomly. But they really do lack any sort of discipline, which is similar to the Tigers, interestingly enough. If you look at the Tigers' plate discipline stats, Fern, they don't walk ever. They have like a 6% walk rate. The White Sox also 24% K rate, 6% walk rate, right there with the Tigers as far as how often they swing at lefties, how much contact they're trying to make. So I think this is a very solid spot to get on Snell before people start to be like, hey, Blake Snell's really good. You know, we've always kind of been a believer. I think it's just a question of, you know, how deep in this game can he get? You know, how much damage can he avoid and how many Ks can he generate? You know, what are we going to get the same thing we saw in the last two starts, or are we going to get something, you know, a little bit more what we were used to with Blake Snell?
Yeah, no, that's a good way to look at it. I mean, I was last night, I was really heavy on, oh my God, what the fuck is his name? I just drew blank. Jose Barrios. And he just took a big fat dookie on them. I mean, just absolutely dominated.
Fucking 11 Ks over 7.
Yeah, innings. But I mean, even so, you know, I don't know how. I mean, I don't really watch the White Sox that often, but I did watch this game because I had a vested interest in it. I mean, obviously, it's Barrios, right? Or Barrios, Barrios, whatever. Who gives a shit? And he was on his game last night, obviously. But even so, I mean, you can just tell that the White Sox are just they're not a disciplined hitting team. I mean, they're not a patient team. And I think that really stems from the fact that they just don't have any, you know, I mean, top to bottom, like they don't have any devastating hitters outside of Abreu and maybe Garcia.
Right.
Especially, you know, against pitchers of Barrios's caliber and the way Snell is pitching, as you've described it, I mean, he could come right in and I don't want to say he's going to put up a line of 11 Ks and five base runners, but I mean, this is the team that he can keep that ball rolling on without a doubt. I mean, just watching them with my eye test, you know, after watching teams like the Orioles and Nationals on a regular basis here in Maryland, I mean, it's just like, damn, man. Like, watching these White Sox feels like I'm watching, like, 2007 Orioles, you know, like, garbage baseball. So,
yeah. Oof. No, I know.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I mean, it's they're just – they're a couple years away. You can tell that they have the pieces. Every once in a while they pop, but this is not – this team just – they don't have any reason to be disciplined. They just have – you know, just trying to kind of learn and get through it.
Now, that said, if I am using Snell, I mean – and again, you know, I do recognize that he is coming on strong here. I am going to, you know, if I'm running multiple lineups, you know, definitely try to squeeze in a little mini hedge of, like, Garcia and Abreu. You know, just in case. But
I feel that. I don't mind that because, you know what, those are two guys who have insane numbers against lefties. And I don't, you know, I mean, we know Snell can, you know, put one on and give up a run. He can give up a lot of runs. But and more importantly, he can get pulled in the fifth is what he's really good at. But I don't know. I think you know.
I like it, man.
Listen, if this is our last pod – it's kind of apropos that my boy Blake Snell is
it
out
is.
Here
you've, I've been yeah, talking you've been about talking it. Yeah, game. And that's a hill you got to die on this last pod, dude.
Right? It's a Blake Snell. Blake Snell in all formats.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. I like it. I'll pour it out for you and make a lineup with him in there as my SP1. No, I'm just kidding. SP2.
There you go.
Nice. Well, I got another dart throw here, and that is Jack Flaherty. Yes, that's a real human being from this century because it sounds like the name of a guy Jack from like Flaherty. 1946. Like, oh, Jack Flaherty awesome. Is in the heavyweight bout this weekend at Madison Square Garden.
Like he sounds like an usher at my church, like a retired Catholic usher in Florida at the church at St. Patrick's where I grew up.
It's funny, man. That's all Jack Flaherty over there. Tag.
Jack Flaherty.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Flaherty, how are you?
Yeah,
sir?
Well, this Mr. Flaherty at 6,700 buckaroos on DK is getting the San Francisco Gigantes. 4.2 implied runs on the open. And right now at this recording time, 10 p.m. Thursday night, it's a push roughly. You know, I mean, it's essentially a push at minus 108. You know, we'll see how that line moves as the night and the day goes on. You know, I'm not really sure what direction it's going to move in, given the fact that this is his major league debut, and, you know, who knows what other variables will come into play. But, you know, as far as Flaherty goes, he's the organization's, he's the Cardinals' number three prospect. And like I said, he's making his major league debut. The Cards just traded Mike Leake to Seattle. So Seattle got them a hell of a pitcher right there in Mike Leake. So congratulations to them. No, he's not bad. I mean, real life, you know, we talked about it before, Leake. Real.
I mean, he can manage innings. I just don't know. I mean, why did they sell?
I don't know.
I don't understand.
I'm not really sure. It doesn't really. I mean, they got a lot of young arms. Let's put it that way. I mean,
maybe
with Flaherty coming up, and then your boy, what's his face? Fuck, I just forgot his name all of a sudden. The guy that just went like ham the other night, the youngster on the Cardinals.
Luke Weaver.
A couple other guys I know in the Cardinals organization. So, you know, I guess that made Leake expendable. Probably going to go forward with like Lynn and Waka and Carmo up at the top there. But anyways, before we even get to Flaherty's numbers, I discovered a prospect rating system called Kato, K-A-T-O-H.
Yeah, Kato. Yeah. They use Kato.
I said Kato. Yeah. Kato. Chris Mitchell of the Hardball Times devised that, and yeah, it's on Fangraphs. A lot of literature on Fangraphs on the Kato prospect rating system. So he's got this whole algorithm that, you know, he basically, you know, devised that ranks prospects, you know, I guess completely objectively. So in an objective ranking system, according to Kato, he's 33rd in the midseason rankings and the fifth best pitcher in all of baseball, prospect on all of baseball, according to this model. As far as human-made lists go, as opposed to an algorithmic one, Baseball America's 2017 midseason ranks see Flaherty at 57th, the 23rd pitcher on the list. So you can see that Kato likes position players more, and Baseball America human beings like pitchers more, given the abundance of pitchers on that list. Bottom line is, whether you're looking at the human list or the computer algorithm list, the bottom line is we're talking about a kid that at worst is a fringe top 50 prospect, most likely closer to like top 40, who knows, maybe even better. 25 starts between AA and AAA this year. He's put up a 25% K rate, 1.14 whip, 232 batting average against, just 12 homers allowed and 148 innings pitched. Those are all really good.
Did you see that ground ball rate?
No, what's it? I closed my tab on Flaherty just now.
I believe it was Flaherty. There's somebody else who may be getting called up. I believe it was Flaherty, however.
Let me take a look. I'm getting it right
60%.
Here. Oh, did you get it?
Almost a 60%. Oh, gosh, of course. Dude, nope, sorry, wrong John Flaherty. John Flaherty played for the Red Sox in the early 90s.
Oh. Flaherty's got a 41% in AAA and a 40. So basically 40% ground ball rate.
So then the guy I was looking at, because I closed his stats and you were talking about these numbers and I was like, wait a second. Who is the other you got? Dylan Peters, the Miami pitcher, the Miami lefty who's getting called up against against Philadelphia.
Oh, right. Yeah, so is Dylan Peters pitching, or is it what's his face? Straley. Because I saw MLB probable pitchers and Straley.
I've seen both, but the Vegas.
Because I kind of like Straley, but then I saw Peters was listed somewhere else.
I'm relatively sure that they set the Vegas lines on on Peters because that's what I'm seeing. But I did see on MLB.com Straley earlier, so I don't know. We could see Straley. I mean, Straley against the Phillies isn't the worst thing in the world, but he hasn't been the same in the second half.
He was really good first half, but I think I've rostered him like less than one. I can count on my fingers the amount of times I've rostered him in the month of August.
No, for sure. Yeah, I kind of love this Flaherty kid in this gigantic ballpark. I mean, you can make some mistakes over here and probably get away with it against a team that, you know, Buster Posey is not playing. He's got the thumb injury. They're not going to risk it. There's no reason to further injure Buster Posey. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets put on the DL or something like
that. Yeah, and honestly, like, outside of Posey, and then, of course, you know, Belt is out of the picture. I mean, who else is there on this team that is remotely scary? I mean, Brandon Crawford. Like, fuck, man.
Who can't hit home runs.
You know, I mean, what's his face? Hunter Pence has been worthless.
Yeah, I know. Hunter Pence. Well, I think once Hunter Pence realized that they weren't going to be a very good team, he probably checked out.
I mean, yeah. So, Denard Span, you know, I mean, obviously you got that lefty-righty matchup, but...
Yeah, he's old.
What the hell? Yeah, dude, and by the way, Denard Span, like, Silver Fox, man. Dude's got some gray in that beard. He needs some Just for Men.
Yeah, Denard Span isn't... That's a nice look, though.
It is.
If I could do the full like thick black beard with a little bit of the gray specks, that's
dude,
nice.
Dude, I'm older than him.
You're older than Denard Span?
Yeah, I'm a month and a half older than him.
Wow.
And I got no gray on my beard.
Well, I don't know.
And you know what his first name is? Kiunta.
Denard.
Really? Kiunta Denard Span.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man. I'm hopefully I my gray comes in like Denard. When it does, I'm kind of looking forward to that, like, you know, distinguished Silver Fox look.
Oh yeah, you definitely have that move.
Yeah,
you definitely have the distinguished Silver Fox fern. That's nice, dude. You're real nice.
But yeah, dude, I'm definitely feeling good about either Flaherty or Snell, whatever angle you want to take as far as paying down in your SP2 slot, or if you have the balls to punt Kershaw or, you know, one of the better options, you know, in the 9-10K range.
You're not aiming for one of these pitchers to be as good as Kershaw, right? You're aiming for them to be as good as Mike Clevinger and Kevin Gausman.
Right.
And listen, if Mike Clevinger or Kevin Gausman kind of hits the bricks, you know, in within 8 innings or two, within 5 innings, you know, you can catch up with all those people if this kid has a good game. So, you know, it's not the end of the world. It makes sense. I understand it. You know, you're targeting someone with strikeout upside. It's going to be low owned. There's a lot of risk there, but who knows? All right, we got to talk about cores here, Fern. We got two pitchers, 12 run total. This is pretty serious, but it's about 6 pick 'em. It's an even. Taijuan Walker versus Kyle Freeland. You know, for me on the Diamondbacks side of things here, Diamondbacks have really struggled against lefties. You know, we saw them in this LA series, beat up Rich Hill a little bit, which was kind of reassuring. But you're gonna have some massive price tags on these guys against Kyle Freeland, who, you know, listen, Kyle Freeland is not anything special. You can attack Kyle Freeland. In fact, if this was in Chase and Kyle Freeland was in Chase, we would certainly have to talk about this situation. The guy just does not have a very serious strikeout rate, 15% in the second half of the season, 4.85 xFIP. You know, for me, I would love to go to the righties here. I would love to go to, you know, my man JD Martinez and Coors. And in fact, if you can figure out how to fit JD Martinez and Coors into your lineup in either format, he's an elite play. But you're paying $5,000 for everybody, $5,400 for Goldie, 4,600 for AJ Pollock, 4,500 for fucking Brandon Drury. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, give me a reason to play $4,500 Brandon Drury, and I'll give you 10 reasons why it's a dumb idea.
Yeah.
You know, and I just can't. I don't know if I can do it.
I hear you. Totally. Yeah, and, you know, the other thing that Freeland has going for him, if you so choose to go that route, which honestly might not be that bad of an idea, considering, you know, the low ownership, like clockwork at Coors for pitchers, is the Diamondbacks are 21st in zone contact rate over the last 2 weeks. Really? they're not making contact on pitches in the zone, and Freeland has the third highest ratio of swinging strikeouts to called strikeouts. So his bread and butter is getting guys to whiff for strike three, and the Diamondbacks are not making contact on pitches in the zone. And furthermore, Freeland throws a lot of pitches in the zone. He throws 46.6% of his pitches in the zone over the last month, and that is, you know, average. So I can see a narrative where Freeland is able to rack up 5, 6, 7 strikeouts against Arizona. The question, though, is can he avoid, you know, giving up a dinger in Coors? And I think he can, given that he does induce a decent amount of ground balls. But more importantly, just a 13.3% home run to fly ball ratio, which is really good. You know, it's obviously risky, you know, but it's, you know, if you choose Freeland as a pitcher, you have definitely an educated reason as to why you chose him in this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's you know, I get it. But I would much rather play J.D. Martinez in Coors.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. Against a lefty?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Chris Iannetta, J.D. Martinez, A.J. Pollock.
All right, what about the Rockies side? Because I hate the Rockies, but Taijuan Walker is a guy that I'm not afraid of.
Oh, no. Taijuan Walker is not a scary guy whatsoever. He's gotten really lucky lately. Just a 79 ERA minus versus 116 xFIP minus. I mean, that's a huge disparity between the ERA and the xFIP, and that is a huge red flag because he's getting really lucky. 14.9% K rate, 6.9% swing strike rate are just god-awful. 91.6% zone contact rate, which is on par with Buck Farmer as the worst on the slate over the last 30 days. Everything on Taijuan Walker's ledger here is bad. So I think if we choose to go Coors, it wouldn't be that bad of an idea. And I think it's possible that people might fade away from Coors for two reasons. A, because Kershaw is on the slate and, you know, obviously they can't afford it. And B, we got burned like a motherfucker by Jordan Zimmermann at Coors and that Tigers series because the Rockies did not show up.
Yeah, he's just not striking anybody out like he was earlier.
Yeah, I mean, 14.9%, dude. That's terrible.
I know. He had three consecutive starts in August where he did not get a quality start. He didn't make it past the fifth. He was getting hit. He was giving up, you know, he gave up five runs in two consecutive starts. He came, you know, he bounced back in his last two, but against some terrible opponents in the Giants and the Mets. Now, you know, like I am a person who really doesn't believe in the Rockies. But they've shown some plate discipline recently, and I think it's helping them. You know, they have been walking more. They've been sitting on pitches. Their WRC plus against righties is up, and they're at home. And, I mean, if there's ever a time to play these guys, it's at home.
Yeah, the thing I don't like about the Rockies is they're just a really top-heavy lineup. I mean, the bottom of that lineup is just worthless. And, you know, just this year, I don't know. Like, I don't even want to say that it's variance or anything. Like, you'd expect this to level itself out over the season, you know, that Coors supersedes talent, you know. But this season, I mean, the Rockies at Coors have not been the Rockies at Coors in years past as far as, like, bottom of the lineup. You know, if it's not, you know, the top four or five guys, it's you can't stack the Rockies that often these days. I mean, so it's a little frustrating to use them. And whenever a Coors is on the slate, it just irritates me because, like, I want to use it, but I don't.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, how many times have you been burned by Coors this year?
I hate the pricing adjustment. And it's not that it's not justified. I just really believe, like, you skew the value of that ballpark by just putting an extra $1,000.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you and I talked about it on the phone the other day. Is, I mean, like, when Coors is a slam dunk, fade it.
Yeah, no, totally. That's the thing, though, is I don't think this is a slam dunk. You have a dead even split. I think, you know what would be kind of fun is maybe take one of these rookie pitchers and just game stack it.
Yeah.
You know, just get everybody that you want. I mean, in the outfield, get JD, get Blackman. At third, get Arenado. You know, get Paulie Goldschmidt. You know, get Brandon Drury. Get whoever. You know, I mean, I think that to me is interesting. I think you attack, you know, two solid three-man, four-man stacks, and you just go straight at it. And if Coors blows up, Coors blows up, and
that's why I love using DK, you know, for my bankroll size is, you know, like I'm in the triple digits bankroll size, you know, I'm not a 4, 5, 6-digit kind of guy here, you know, so I love the fact that I can, you know, max enter a tournament for $5 in like the quarter arcade on DK. And I can, and it's beautiful, you know, and you can win, you know, $100, $150, you know, in that contest. What the hell? Wait. Is that my browser?
Why not? No, what's wrong?
I just, all of a sudden, like, an Xfinity ad came up on my, like.
No, I didn't hear it. Weird. We're good.
Yeah, but anyways, so, yeah, my point is that
that's cool.
In this contest, you can max enter 20 lineups, and you don't have to worry about, like, missing out on Coors because you can throw one or two in there and be like, all right, I got my Coors exposure. So just something to point out.
All right. There are other bats, too, that I like. So,
yeah, fuck Coors. Talk about Cleveland and Buck Farmer while I go run to the fridge and get another brewski.
All right, go for it. Listen, Cleveland just, they've proven they can pretty much get to any pitcher. You can get Chris Sale, you can get to anybody. Buck Farmer's just outmatched. He's been down in AAA since June. He got sent down after a Tampa Bay start, or July some point. I can't remember, June or July. Thing is, Farmer has decent strikeout stuff. He's a prospect. He wouldn't be pitching here. But they've got a doubleheader tomorrow. They called him up last week knowing that they're kind of – maybe they're shopping Verlander. They're going to get a little bit more thin. He's a guy that they want to bring up in 2018. And he pitched fine last week. You know, he did really nicely in a five-inning start for the Tigers. But the reality is here he's completely overmatched. The Indians, an elite combination of plate discipline and power – they continue to string together runs. They are a team that very quickly and easily can get out ahead of a pitcher 7-0. You know, we saw him do it to Jordan Montgomery. They had a five-run first inning against Jordan Montgomery just the other day. Add to that the fact that this is a doubleheader, and the Detroit bullpen will probably be on the back half of their quality starters. You know, and they have nothing. The Detroit fans have nothing to live for. Detroit lineup card has nothing that is exciting now. They sold JD. They sold Jay up. There's been rumors of selling Verlander for forever now. you know, I think they're just waiting for the right deal to come along. So you got to think that Cleveland here in this spot, you know, can string together some runs, create base runners, and be successful. Listen, this guy once allowed 3 home runs in a game to the Rays. So we got to attack some of the lefties here. You can see he's susceptible to lefty power. Instantly, that makes me like Jay Bruce. E5 has been hitting righties better. Or excuse me, not E5. Jose Ramirez has been hitting righties better all year long. So those are my top 2 plays. You know, if Bradley Zimmer for some reason ever creeps closer up in the lineup, maybe on the second day of a doubleheader, I love Bradley Zimmer in a good lineup spot. E5, of course. Frankie Lindor for me, take it or leave it. I think, you know, Frankie's always better against lefties, and that's always where I want to play him. But he has been hitting the ball well, so I'm okay with him if you want him. But Bruce Ramirez, E5, and, you know, whoever else creeps up into the top top 5, top 6 of this lineup, I could get into. You know, you could see some, you could see some interesting names. You could see some. I forget who they had up in the lineup the other day.
They had what's his name? Yandy Diaz,
and he had a game, man. He had a game.
He's batting cleanup.
He'll get a game. Yeah. So although I think he's a righty.
I want to say he's switch. I could be wrong though.
Is he? They have all the switch hitters.
Dude, they have. I can't remember. They're like the first team with 3 switch hitters with 20 home runs or something. Yeah. That's, oh no, crazy. Yanni's a righty. By the way, some of these Indians bats are really cheap. Zimmer, Yan Gomes is hitting the ball hard lately. Yandy. Yan and Yandy. Holy shit, Yan and Yandy. That's kind of funny. Both of them are 3K. And Yandy's 3rd and outfield eligible on DK. Zimmer's just 3,600. Nice. Which 3,600 for those of you FanDuelers, 3,600 on DK is like 2,600 on FanDuel. So got some nice prices there too.
Yeah, definitely. You got some nice prices for sure. On FD, I have not pulled up their prices just yet. But why don't you talk to us about the O's here? Because, you know, I mean, I don't know what to say, Josh. They're only scoring 8 runs tonight. It's not like, you know, couldn't they do better?
The O's are just, I mean, I'm so happy.
They're freaking crushing the
ball, climbing up in the standings. Last I saw, 1 game out of the wild card. AL, by the way, AL wild card, MLB standings, Google real quick. AL wild card is interesting.
It changes every hour. It really does. Even when people aren't playing.
You got the Yankees, Twins, Angels, O's, all neck and neck here. And I love seeing the Angels, Twins, and O's jockeying for position. I don't think very many people thought those 3 teams. Well, you know, nobody ever thinks the Orioles are going to be there for the last 6 years, and they always are. So,
hey, listen, pal.
Fuck you guys.
Last 10, we're 7-3. We're nipping at
you.
You
guys
heels.
Are coming up too. Rays are 4 games. Yeah, 4 games out.
I know. I know. After tonight, we could be 3.
Tim
games.
Beckham be damned.
Well, no. I know. Well, no, we wouldn't. That's because Minnesota won today.
But yeah, as far as the O's.
No, but I love the O's in this spot. Talk to me about the O's here against
Biagini. So Biagini, you know, he's only logged 10 innings pitched against the O's this year. Not very much of a sample size, but we're not really worried about looking at any BVP sample size data in this situation here, because he's just been bad over the last month. And while he's been bad over the last month, the Orioles have been very, very good over the last month. In that time span, Biagini owns a whopping 122 xFIP minus, and get this, 0 swinging strikeouts over the last 2 weeks. He has not induced a single swinging strikeout in over 2 weeks, which... You know, last I checked, is not good.
That's not a good indicator for pitch quality.
No,
I don't think.
It's not. It definitely isn't. And 81.8% zone contact rating, which is extremely bad. Guys are having no trouble squaring up on his pitches. 25% home run to fly ball rate, 31% line drive rate, the highest line drive rate on the slate. I mean, I don't know what else you could ask for. And then all of a sudden, you look up and you see, if you haven't been paying attention, you know, the Orioles have been, you know, right up there as one of the best offenses in baseball over the last couple weeks. Second highest WRC plus, third highest ISO, highest home run to fly ball rate. It's not that complicated, guys. Like, don't rack your brain over it. The Orioles are, as far as I'm concerned, you know, as close to a lock as you can get, given the way that they're hitting. Just some of my favorite options here. Just kind of want to look at who's hitting the ball harder lately. Chris Davis is coming along, hitting it harder. 97 miles an hour exit velocity over the last 15 days. You know, Wellington Castillo is, you know, hopefully in the last month going to live up to his free agent signing, you know, that the O's made when they reached out to him, because he kind of was in a dull state there for a few months. And thank God Manny is coming along. He's hitting the ball better, as well as Jonesy. And Trey Mancini just keeps the ball rolling. And then, of course, you know, John Scope and Tim Beckham, you know, you can't complain about using either of those fellas. But I think you really got to get Manny in there, because, you know, I think this last month he's just going to, you know, really start crushing. And he does like hitting those right-handed pitchers, 222 ISO, 324 wOBA against them.
Have you seen, I mean, the numbers for Biagini as a starter are just brutal.
I don't have it isolated as starter. You have isolated starter numbers?
Yeah, I have it here on Fangraphs. A 6.02 ERA, allowing a 3.37 wOBA total. You know, he just allows so many base runners via contact, which is what you like to see. I mean, his most recent start, you know, his most recent start, he had 23 batters faced through only 3.2 innings, and he allowed 12 base runners in that time. So, I mean, you know, you're almost batting 500 against this guy. I think you got to go to the top of the order. I think you have to start with what you're doing. If you're going to get that many plate appearances, volume for guys like Tim Beckham and John Scope is just going to be insane. You know, they're just going to be on every single time, and then you just back them up with the power. So I really like that call. I think that people think on the surface that Biagini's still got good stuff, and he just really doesn't right now.
Yeah. Well, talk about the KC Royals, because I'm liking this spot against Dylan G.
Dylan G, we may remember he got a couple good starts for us in Texas, and we would stack against him down there. Moved over to Minnesota in August, and he's had a couple starts there. You know, it's the lefties. It's the lefties. It's been the lefties all year. He's allowed a 3.96 wOBA and a 5.41 slug to lefties this year, which is just absolutely insane. And then you go down to the batted ball data and you say, well, it can't be any worse. Well, it gets worse, right? Okay. 15% K rate, 11% walk rate to lefties, 6.1 xFIP. He has I'm not making this up. Well, sorry. Okay, so this isn't actually as bad as I thought it was. I thought it was a 57% ground ball rate. It's a 47% fly ball rate. So he has an extremely negative ground ball to fly ball ratio. Now, the thing about it is he doesn't allow a massive amount of hard contact. But the amount of fly balls that you have here in target field, I gotta love the lefties here, okay? I gotta love me some Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, and Brandon Moss, frankly. Brandon Moss is literally, I believe, min price on FanDuel, a lefty, you know, who we know is capable of double dong. And when you have a guy that's that cheap, $2,200, you know, it's almost like a Kike Hernandez play. Like, you play him so you can get to other guys. So I will take the three lefties, and then I will take I'll take my man, Mr. Reliable, with the shit, Merrifield. I just love that guy these days. Like, you can put Whit Merrifield in your lineup, and you can really feel pretty confident you're going to get at least 12 fantasy points. It's just so nice. I love that guy. So yeah, that's my four-man if I'm going Kansas City. And you know what? The prices aren't terrible. They moved up a little bit. They were pretty cheap the other day. You know, you're getting Moustakas. Oh wow, wait, the Moustakas price is amazing. I thought he was higher than this. $3,100 for Mike Moustakas and $3,700 for Eric Hosmer.
Moustakas, okay, get this. On DK, Moustakas is $3,800, which is a really nice price.
Oh my God.
But you ready for this one? Sal Perez, $2,800.
Ooh, that's a great,
like,
spot.
Free for a player of his caliber on DK.
Yeah, and the thing about G is if you want to know, the hard contact comes from the righties. The hard contact does not come from the righties. He's actually kind of...
Well, let me tell you something about G that I like is... this has kind of been a way I pick on pitchers, is I love to pick on bad pitchers that don't walk a lot of guys and throw a lot of strikes. And the reason why... this is like what Bartolo does. Like, Bartolo doesn't walk anybody and just pounds the strike zone. But you don't want to attack... with regularity, pitchers that suck because they walk a lot of guys, because some way, somehow, they might find a way to get out of it, you know, but the pitcher that just pounds the strike zone but just isn't good, you know, is going to get hit. And G has one of the lowest pitches per batters faced on the slate, and 2.5% walk rate over the last month, 49% zone contact or zone rate. So throws a lot of strikes, doesn't walk anybody. So he lets guys hit it. And you mentioned in the batted ball data, just a 16.7% hard contact, 23.3% soft contact, both outstanding numbers. But what does that tell you? It tells you that he gives up a lot of medium contact. And I think with the small sample size that I'm looking at, I think might be the same that you're looking at, Sean. I think that starts to drift in the way of the hard contact, because if he's giving up he's giving up 60% medium contact, and that
You look at his recent start against Toronto, right? I mean, I'm not going to look necessarily at his start against the White Sox and try to gain anything there. But you look at his start against Toronto, he allowed 8 base runners, 4 runs, 2 dingers. And you're talking about those fly balls. And what you're looking for is exactly that line that he gave you in that Toronto game, you know. Multiple base runners and then a homer to Hosmer and Moustakas. Boom, boom, you know, that kind of thing. So that's what I'm hoping for. You know, it's not a perfect profile. You wish it was a little bit weaker in some areas, but I still want to attack him here, primarily because I think Kansas City goes under-owned and they're underpriced.
I'll be shocked if Moustakas doesn't go yard.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to say it. That describes my confidence as well in that lineup. But dude, it's time. It's great. It's a great day when we not only get to roster Blake Snell, but we get to back it up with a Rays stack. So talk to me about the Rays versus Reynaldo
Lopez. 5.4 runs on the open. Loving that number for the Rays. I love when you open in the mid-fives. It's just, I mean, Vegas has a lot of confidence that the Rays are gonna take a big old dookie on Reynaldo. It's the battle of the Rays, the Reynaldo versus the Rays, and only one Ray can come out on top. And I think that's going to be the Rays, not the Ray.
Yeah, I
like they're one of the deadliest lineups in baseball lately. They ebb and flow, you know, and I think that that is par for the course for a team like them, which is basically like an all or nothing kind of club. You know, the Rays strike out a lot and they hit the shit out of the ball. And some weeks they can't, you know, buy a hit, and some weeks they hit three homers in a game. And Reynaldo, he's just, you know, he strikes guys out, okay? He induces whiffs. That's fine. But he gives up dingers, and he gives up hard contact. You know, just looking at the data, he has the lowest ground ball to fly ball rate on the slate. And if you're curious, it's him at 0.4, which is just god-awful, G at 0.59, and Buck Farmer with, at 0.67. So you might be noticing a trend here, guys, is Sean and I like to pick on people, on pitchers with terrible ground ball to fly ball rates. You want your guys to give up fly balls. And the 20%, go ahead.
You can't leave the ballpark on the ground.
You can't leave the ballpark on the ground. Unless you're Billy Hamilton and you sneak it into like the corner and the, you know, down the
throw it over the side.
But 20% home run to fly ball rate, just a 14.8% soft contact, 33% hard contact. The guy just he's your classic, like, strikes guys out and throws gas, but he, when the ball gets hit, it goes far and it leaves the yard. XFIP minus of 124, ERA minus of 161. That tells us that he sucks and he's not getting unlucky. Okay. It's not a matter of luck. Yeah. Like, he's bad and he is performing to the way he should. But like I said, the 26% K rate and the 11% swinging strike rate do give you pause. So I question, who comes out on top, the sluggable yet kind of talented Lopez or the strikeout-prone but slugging Rays? And I think it's the Rays. I think they get this young guy, and you want to load him up. Lefties, Steven Souza, do it.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, I really think, like, Lopez has – he's, you know, he's got pedigree. Like, he's good. The issue is he's like – he really hasn't faced a ton of lefties, and in the samples that he has faced, like, they're hitting him pretty hard, and it makes good sense. Like, this kind of reminds me of Denelson Lamet earlier in the year. You know, and he's on this slate. I was looking back at what he had to offer. You know, Denelson Lamet was really good, but the problem is when you throw that hard and you haven't adjusted your location as a big leaguer and you haven't made sure that, like, you're just basically desperately trying to avoid anyone getting a hold of your fastball, guys are going to find it. They're going to go get it, and they're going to put it up in the air. And, you know, the Rays in this ballpark, they've been hot. They've been hitting the ball well. I'm into it. I mean, I love the lefties here. And I think, like, guy like Logan Morrison at 3-2, super cheap. Lucas Duda, you're not getting him for free anymore. Corey Dickerson, you're not getting him for free anymore. But Kevin Kiermaier is 3-3 on FanDuel. I could get into that. So it all works, man. You can get all the lefties in your lineup these days. And even Brad Miller, dude. Brad Miller, 2-6. That's always a source of salary.
Yeah, I'm into it. Definitely. And the fact that I love that his breaking balls, the average exit velocity on those is well over 90 miles per hour.
Yeah, I was going to say. The breaking stuff.
Yeah, and when you see those 90-plus mile-per-hour exit velocities on those pitches, I mean, that just means that he is like – he's like a dead man walking, because everybody throws a fastball, right? But you need to have deception on your secondary and tertiary pitches, and he just doesn't have that. Like, guys are crushing him. So, I mean, come on, man. Like, this is an easy one here.
Yeah, I think we got to go there. I totally agree with you. All right, so we're on the Rays. I think that we got to also look, Josh, at a couple pivots here, and I really like your call here, but I got one that I want to talk about. Miami versus Pivetta. I mean, this one, I don't know, it kind of feels obvious, but I think on a 15-game slate, maybe Miami, after they burned everybody tonight, gets a little bit overlooked. Pivetta gave up 6 runs on 7 hits through 12 batters, but he only pitched 5 outs, 1.2 innings in the last time against Miami. He has been terrible against right-handers. They almost got through the order twice on him, Vern, through those 2 innings. There were 2 dingers as well. So there were multiple base runners, and there were 2 dingers, one from Marcell Ozuna, one from Christian Yelich. So Marcell Ozuna, after he burns everybody tonight, I love that spot. Go straight back to him against Pivetta, who struggles with righties. We know Ozuna excels against righties. And I have no problem going back to Giancarlo. I mean, Giancarlo is too... You know, it's fade at your own risk every single night. Now, the hard part, especially in cash, the hard part is in a GPP, it makes perfect sense to fade him because everyone is going to play him. So when everybody plays a guy, he's only like 50% tonight. When everybody plays a guy, then you should be automatically fading him because there's really the upside for a tournament just simply is not there. For a flat payout, you want to ride the boat with everybody else. That's totally fine. You don't want to be left out if he does his thing. But for a tournament, there's zero reason to play him because you just don't have the leverage on the field in that way. So tomorrow night, hopefully they go a little bit overlooked. They get everybody with cores, you know, maybe something like that. I could definitely go to Giancarlo, Yelich, and Ozuna. But I think, you know, I have no problem with JT Realmuto as well. I don't usually play him, but he had a 3-hit day against Pivetta that day. He was excellent. So, you know, was capable of making contact here. He's usually better against lefties, but he's not bad for this situation against Pivetta, who sucks against righties. Over 400 wOBA to righties. So I'm into Miami.
Yeah, I like it. And one thing I like about Pivetta is he's a hard thrower, and you know, he is a better pitcher than you know, some of the guys we've been talking about here, you know, on the whole. But a team like Miami, you know, does well against these guys with high velocity pitches, because, you know, if you took high school physics, you know that when something coming fast hits something moving fast, it goes away really fast. Did we learn that in physics? I don't know.
I slept.
Yeah, a fast pitch and a good bat speed equals a ball going really far. So
there you go. That's a nice.
There you go. No, I like that stack. I like it. And yeah, and you said it. There's a few deadly righties on that team. And you know, it seems like a really good spot for the fish. So
yeah, let's do it.
But man, that KC against Dylan G, I equally like the Twinkies against Jason Hamill. We might be having a game stack situation here. And honestly, like, I feel like no matter how good the Twins are, no matter how high their wOBA is, no matter how high their WRC plus is, no matter how exciting the highlight reels on Baseball Tonight are, whatever, like, no matter what they do, people are still going to overlook them because they're the Twins and they don't have Miguel Sano. Screw Miguel Sano. Miguel Sano, who, I mean, they're crushing it.
He was striking out literally on every.
Yeah, night. I mean, he and Judge are like the strikeout kings, you know, but people still act like, you know, if Judge isn't in the lineup or Sano isn't in the lineup, their respective teams are just like inept. And that's not true, you know. As everybody knows, the Yankees, I mean, I'm not trying to take anything away from Aaron Judge. He's a stud. But like, this is a guy that still clearly has holes in his swing, and the same thing with Sano. So yeah, they're elite young players, but don't, you know, you can't act like these teams are worthless without them in the lineup. And the Twins are proving that, you know. I mean, Miguel Sano's been out for, what, a couple weeks now, yet the Twins are managing to put up a MLB-leading 140 WRC+, and MLB-leading 255 ISO over the past couple weeks. And for those of you that don't have context, understanding of the context of those numbers, I mean, a 140 WRC+ by a team, you know, by a player, it's like, that's good. That's really good. But it's not like, for a team, that's outstanding. Yeah. And a 255 ISO for anybody, team or player.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So they're crushing it. So, I mean, guys like Eddie Rosario, Byron Buxton, Brian Dozier, Max Kepler, Eduardo Escobar, I mean, even Joe Mauer, they're swinging hot bats. They're putting up a lot of runs.
Fucking Mauer hit a homer.
Mauer hit a homer today? Old man. Holy shit, yeah. Stop the presses.
The taste plate. Yeah, I know. Stop the presses.
But they're all just on fire right now, and they're getting Jason Hamill. He's always a targetable pitcher. And, you know, and like I said, like the Twins, they're going to go overlooked. And the thing I like, and again, this is something you and I talked about, Sean, the other day on the phone, is that I love when the implied total is in the fours. That 4.9 opening total, the Twins open at 4.9 runs, 10th highest total. So it kind of slots right in that no man's land where people don't like immediately have their eye drawn to it. But what the fuck, dude? What's the difference between 4.9 and 5.1? You know?
Totally.
So,
agree.
Yeah, totally. I think they're in a really sexy spot here. And, you know, not only for run production potential, but also ownership.
Dude, did you see he's given up 7 home runs in his last 3 starts?
Wow. What?
I mean, he's good. Like, it's Jason Hamill. Like, he's not, you know, I mean, he's not the world's worst pitcher. I think in name value alone, people will probably be like, well, I don't know. But he just, the batted balls are just flying. The curveball is getting hit on both sides of the plate. You know, he's not exactly a guy who's getting blown up, but it really seems like the end of the year fatigue is catching up with him. And we know if you can steal 2 home runs out of a stack, you know, that is immediately a wonderful thing. So I'm into it. I'm into the Twins. It might be one of my favorite stacks in this league.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to get a Twins Royals game stack without a doubt.
Yeah. Definitely. All right. So I think that's it. There's a couple other spots I'm sure that will open up or reveal themselves as things go on. But let's jump over to FanDuel. Let's see if we can throw together.
And before we throw our lineup, we don't even have to talk about this at length whatsoever. But we didn't even mention the worst pitcher in the universe, and that's Sean Manaea.
Oh, I know. He actually has been really bad. And I was going to talk about Seattle. The Seattle righties just don't do it for me. I guess that's my
issue. I mean,
other
than
really.
Nelson Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Segura, Danny Valencia, Nelson Cruz. Mitch Haniger, though, actually, you know, you could talk me into Mitch Haniger. I was rostering him quite a bit, and he blew up in that last start against Baltimore. So I could see myself going to a Seattle stack that just goes completely overlooked against someone who people think still has stuff. And Manaea has a 15% strikeout rate in the second half.
And just 2 quick facts, and let's build our lineups. 7.5% K rate over the last 2 week or month. Ugh. And get this.
Yikes.
Get this. Hasn't had a swinging strikeout. He hasn't had a swinging strikeout in that span of time. Ugh. I know. It's terrible. So you got to get a little Seattle exposure.
You got to get you some Seattle exposure. All right, Fern, where do you want to start this whole thing,
man? Well, what do we want to do, Sean? Do we want to start by building a Kershaw line?
Well, No, because I knew it was going to be hard, so I just chose not to do it.
Okay, well, then let's start with...
I don't want to be a quitter. Well,
what are we doing? Are we doing DraftKings?
I'm doing... Why don't you go over to your... Go to your DK lineup over there. Go to your DK workshop. Right now, what I'm working with is a Rays Cleveland stack, and I think... I'm probably going to fill them in. The real difficult spot to tomorrow night is going to be, well, I was going to say the difficult spot is really going to be figuring out what to do with third base. For me right now, third base, besides Moustakas, who I absolutely love, third base is a little flat. I'm not going to lie. Third base feels a little bit flat. Excuse me. I take that back. You got Manny. What am I talking about? I completely forgot about the O's against... Oh, wait a second. Here we go. This is what we're doing. This is what we're doing here. All right. So here's... Oh, that's not going to work. Don't you hate that feeling when you feel like you figured it out and you're like, ooh.
I hear you, buddy.
All right, here's what I got. Yeah. You ready, Fern? A little Orioles stack mixed with some Cleveland. So a 3-2-2 with Mike Clevinger. So Lucas Duda, Corey Dickerson, followed by Jose Ramirez and Jay Bruce. And then a three-man Baltimore stack, Manny Machado, Tim Beckham. And Mark Trumbo, who, you know, for what it's worth, has been hitting the ball pretty hard lately. And you know, he isn't necessarily hit righties all that well. And I probably would rework this in some way in order to get myself up to Mancini or something like that. But I think you could do worse than Mark Trumbo.
Yeah, I definitely hear you on that one. Trumbo, I don't know. Yeah, no, I mean, the thing with Trumbo is, like, at some point he's going to click and he'll be fine.
Right.
I'm looking here. Just trying to, like, hammer this out. Okay, so I want to do something here on DraftKings where I get Kershaw and Jack Flaherty.
Oh, nice.
Okay. I like Mitch Garver at catcher.
Yeah, you could do Minnesota stack.
Although
Minnesota is priced up all over the industry these days, man.
Let's drop down here. I was going to say, Sal Perez at 2,800. Then I got Chris Davis at 3,800. And then your boy Moose at 38.
Nice.
Wit the Shit at 41. So I like Wit and Moose, but they're kind of far apart in the order. Sal is kind of in the middle there. I need a shortstop and a couple outfielders. Who are some cheap outfielders I can get here? Well, who's a cheap shortstop?
Brandon Moss, cheap outfielders.
Taylor Motter gets some run, doesn't he? He does.
Mitchell, I was going to say, I think Mitch Haniger took his spot. Oh my gosh, the Mariners
are
so cheap.
Hey, what about Adam Rosales against Kyle Freeland?
Yeah, that's very, very viable.
Or Paul DeJong is $100 more against Johnny Cueto, who, by the way, if you guys don't realize this, Johnny Cueto is returning after an absence.
Yeah, I don't really know what to make of that.
That's my point. He was really bad.
Yeah.
Okay. So right now, on DK, I've got Kershaw and Flaherty, Sal Perez, Chris Davis, Whit Merrifield, Mike Moustakas, DeJong, Cruz. Because I feel like I need to get Nelson Cruz.
You're all in on Nelson Cruz.
I need to get Cruz against Manaea. Like, Manaea's been just really, really, really bad, and Cruz is really, really, really good. And I got 3,500 left over. So there's a lot I can do there with that 3,500. You know, I gotta, you know, I have a gigantic list of players here, so.
Yeah, no, you can do anything with 3,500. All right, you ready for a Kershaw lineup on FD? Four man Kansas City stack, because Kansas City's just priced pretty well for power and upside. You get, I didn't realize Melky Cabrera was only 2,800. He's going to be batting in the three hole, no doubt about it. So I went Hosmer, Moustakas, Cabrera, and Moss, which gives me like a very strong core to that lineup. All of those guys will be batting from the left side. And then, you know, I wasn't in love with Seattle, but looking at their prices, you can get some righties from Seattle for really good salary relief. Gene Segura, 2,700 is just, that's such a good price for a contact hitter. Mitch Haniger, 2,800. He was in the five hole last time out. Mike Zunino smashes. We know he's 2,900 at catcher, which, you know, is a little bit spendy, but if you want to kind of complete the correlation and get, you know, a number of guys in there that should be in a good position against Manaea, I think Zunino is certainly one of them that goes overlooked. And then I needed to kind of find some savings at second base as a one-off because I paid up for catcher, so I went to Brad Miller there. With the shit is just so expensive on FanDuel tonight, so I couldn't go.
I got something for you here, buddy. Ryan Braun is 3,200 on DK. Yeah.
What?
Am I missing? Am Dude, I missing this is the something kind of stuff here?
No.
I mean, I haven't been like screwed.
I mean, he hasn't hit a dinger in years.
He's been really bad, actually. Shit.
He's been really bad.
Oh, fuck, dude. 3,200 is like nothing.
I know. Tanner Roark is not exactly a world beater either, but he has been good in the second half. Tanner Roark, after he came off the DL, has been way more effective.
All right, so then I love Yasiel Puig against Lamet. Puig doesn't strike out, and he's got great bat speed. He does well against pitchers who have throw gas like Lamet. And Puig has just been really good in the second half. And then Melky, I guess we could put Melky in there instead of Braun. So Kershaw, Flaherty. I got the Royals four-man stack. If you're feeling frisky on DK, you can do the five-man stack. But Sal, Witt, Mike, Moustakas, and Melky. Chris Davis at first, DeJong at short, Cruz at outfield one, Puig at outfield two, and of course Melky, like I mentioned before, at my third outfield spot. So, you know, things will transpire as the day goes on. We'll see who's in the lineup where. Maybe something emerges and we see Adam Rosales batting leadoff or whatever the fuck it was the other day where he leadoff dong.
Who knows? Yeah, you got to wait for that value to open up. Some things happen. I mean, but there are enough places to go tomorrow night that you can fit Kershaw in on this slate if you're paying attention. The Rays are cheap. Seattle's cheap. There's some great bats in Kansas City that are underpriced.
You know, and don't forget, you know, guys, I mean, like just looking at the pitchers again, I mean, if you want to, you know, let your big old balls hang there, fade Kershaw and go to Luis Castillo against Pittsburgh. Go to Sonny Gray against Boston, you know.
I don't know how Sonny – I guess the Yankees, they just don't like Pfister in that situation.
Yeah, well, Pfister has been pretty good lately. I'm been impressed with him. Jimmy Nelson against Washington. Washington isn't the same, although they did get Trey Turner and Jason Worth back, so there's something there. But, you know, if you get creative – you know, and do your arts and crafts and, you know, make a nice macaroni collage. You know, you can put together a nice lineup without Kershaw. That's for damn sure.
Macaroni collage. Yeah. Make your macaroni necklace lineup.
So we've got two. We've got 2 minutes before we're at the 1 hour and 30 minute mark. So we got to have some parting words for our last baseball podcast of the season.
Last baseball podcast of the season. Listen, you can't win anything in MLB DFS if you play the chalk. I'm a firm believer. I'm a firm believer in just making sure that what you have does not go owned over 20%, unless you have something that's owned below 5%. I continue, if you play enough, you begin to see how there's just no possible way to climb the leaderboard when you own the exact same players as someone else. I mean, I just jumped up into the cash line because of a Randall Grichuk, or excuse me, because of a, not the Randall Grichuk homer, which, by the way, I fucking call the Randall Grichuk homer. I called it against
Bumgarner. You did. I saw it in the cheat sheet.
I was like,
you put a star next to it. You put asterisks.
I put asterisks next to it because I knew people were going to be like, Sean, what the fuck are you talking about? Randall Grichuk homer. He's batting in the seventh hole against Bumgarner in the worst home run park in the league. And I was like, the pitch profile is too good against Bumgarner. Now it's total luck that he did against Matt Cain, but the pitch profile was good, and I just, because of that fucking walk by Jose Martinez and the run that he scored, no one has Jose Martinez. He's like 4%, so I'm now in the cash. Like that, it's, you have to have people who are low on, and I think NFL is going to be the same way. You guys are going to hear us preach this, play people that aren't being played.
Totally. Yeah, I think also with NFL, you know, and you're going to, you know, in NFL, you can go into things, you know, confidently with one or two lineups. But I think with baseball, you know, over the long haul, you're best served with going in with multiple lineups. That's just my, you know, my thoughts on playing MLB DFS is it's very rare that you can see sustained success with one lineup per night. God bless you if you can do one lineup per night and be like a really profitable player. But I found that going with at least three, ideally like 5 to 10 lineups per night, works best for me. So, I had a lot of fun with MLB this year, but Sean, dude, football, I'm so pumped. I'm ready.
I am right now looking at the football pricing. Sorry, it was just up on a tab that I had. I was like, oh wow. Ooh,
did you say something? I was just looking at Deshaun Kizer's price for week one.
Deshaun Kizer's price
is like negative $100.
He's
like $4,500 on DraftKings, I think.
Deshaun Kizer is 6K.
On DK.
On okay. FD.
Dude, that's a fucking lock. Deshaun Kizer against that funnel. Matty Pittsburgh.
Matty Ryan against the Bears.
Matty
Ryan against the Bears is pretty sweet. I mean, that's... Ben Roethlisberger has.
Oh my God! I want to talk about football for like 5 hours. All right, let's end this show. Let's end this show, and we're going to record our NFL podcast like ASAP.
Yeah, right. Yeah. All right, guys. Hey, good luck in our contest. We'll see you.
We love you guys. You're awesome. Take care.